I'm EJ, one of the co-hosts here. Lori T and I are going to be talking about episode 59, Masks of Body Language. Just a friendly reminder that anything discussed in this podcast is not to be used as a diagnosis or replacement for conversations with your own doctors, therapists, psychologists, or other medical professionals. Body language. Apologies to those of you who listen to us and not watch us. We will do our best to verbally describe what we are talking about if we have to. I don't think we kind of thought that through. So maybe, you know, hop on YouTube, you know, or find Spotify and watch the video. If we do it, I don't think we're going to be doing a lot of actions, but in case we do, check it out on there. You might even get some laughs if we're doing some like walk like an Egyptian. This is kind of one of those things. There's a quote. I'm not sure who said it. I'll see if I can find it. Your words say one thing, but your face is saying another. And I know my roommate says that to me a lot because she'll be like, you say that you're enjoying yourself, but you look like you're being tortured. And so how important is body language in everyday life professionally, in personal life? I remember having a public speaking class and a communications class, and the professor was talking about anything crossed on your body, whether it's your hands are crossed over each other, your fingers are crossed over, your toes are crossed, your arms are crossed. It means you're like, it's a body language trigger to say you're closed off and you're not interested in hearing what I'm saying. And I was sitting with my folded, you know, hands folded kind of in front of me, just casually, just trying to relax. And he pointed that out. So it's ever since then, I kind of always be mindful, like when I'm sitting and talking to somebody, I try and kind of to relax and I'm listening to them because I don't want to put off that I'm not paying attention. So that's kind of stuck with me. And, you know, there's always those times where somebody will say something and your eyebrow will quirk and you'll go, or those eyes will look, and or you'll look at somebody else and be like, what just happened? What just happened? And so we just wanted to talk a little bit about that, because I know that can be a mask. That can be a huge mask for protection. It can be a huge mask for positive things as well. You know, sometimes people sitting on their hands is because they don't want to talk with them, because I have a bad habit of talking with my hands. So oftentimes when you see me fidgeting around on the video, it's probably because I'm restless and my hands are probably tucked underneath my legs so I don't start talking with them.
I know I tend to, when I'm nervous, I tend to use my hands, or I tend to get more animated in my face, in my body language. I will be more animated. It's often a cue that I'm nervous, right, or that I'm really excited about mm-hmm. something, or passionate about something. I can't remember exactly when. I think it was a brother at church, and he was talking about the way people worship. And he was talking about, okay, so you have the hands, right? Then you have the halfway hands. Then you right. have the on hands, you know. And, yeah. and then you just have
stages of worship, yeah. Yes. I love those videos when I see them pop up.
It's kind of funny to think about that. But I know it is
talking about
where's too. Your comfort level? Where do you feel comfortable worshiping and expressing that? And sometimes you just feel comfortable expressing it this way.
Yeah.
With this
holding
way.
A little dog holding yeah. a couch. Praising, I think it's Go important ahead. To note that it is a huge communication tool that can be a positive and a negative. It's a form of communication, and T can definitely talk more on that because it is a difficult one to master. And I mean, look at even the men and women who go through boot camp. and learn how to stand a certain way when a certain officer or a certain like upper ranked person is in the room. And if you're not, they, you know, give you a hard time about it. It's, you're treated, usually reprimanded for it. You know, if you're slumping in the chair, you're not really paying attention, or you're bored. Granted, there are some times I've had some people talking and it's just like, I can only lean over so much. Or I'll text Lori and I'll be like, can we go?
So what's interesting, first of all, is the very first way we communicate. Not only as infants do we communicate our needs through body language, but we're receiving communication through body language. Our mother's face is often the first face we see. It's the first way we learn how something is pleasing to another person or not, is through facial expression, body language, just, and even through the touch and how they're held. So that's our very first form of communication. That makes any, you know, that there's actual messages being given and received. Now babies cry right off the bat, and but that's almost, there's no real communication in that at first. After a while they'll give certain cries and we can figure out what they need and want from that. But yeah, so our very first communication. So I just wanted to point that out. Number two, it's interesting because we, you know, like you were taught, like if you cross your arms, that means you're closed off. It actually doesn't mean that. And we don't necessarily perceive it as closed off. If someone's got their arms crossed, we don't necessarily perceive that. It's a whole. It's body language includes not just the crossing of the arms, it's the look on the face, it's the scenario, it's the setting. If someone's got their arm crossed and it's cold outside, our brains are going to assume that person's cold, right? Because that's the context we put it in. So the key to body language is change.
Yeah,
that's a piece of it. And then again, context. To me, those are huge pieces. When I'm in a session, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not just looking for if the person's got their arms crossed. Now that maybe a piece, but they have their arms crossed and their heads bowed and they're hunched forward. Boy, they're sure communicating something there, right? Right. So that's, yeah. So, but for me, a lot of it's about change, and does it match the context? Does it match the environment? If I've got someone who's raising their voice at me, because that's a part of the body language, they've got a loud voice, and they're leaned forward and their fists are clenched. Well, that's aggressive.
Right.
That's pretty aggressive. But if their voice is louder and they're, you know, kind of talking like this, well, then they're probably excited. Right. So it is very complex. It's a very complex system. And then not everybody, just like how we talk, not everybody speaks the same. So in some cultures, looking someone in the eye, which is a body language, looking them in the eye is disrespectful. In other cultures, not looking you in the eye is disrespectful.
Right.
There's also ageism, you know, just depends on where, what generation you're from. The older generation, it's definitely, you know, you look at me when I talk to you, you know, don't talk to me. Don't look at me in that tone of voice.
Right.
It's always one of my favorites.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. You know, yep. So, but we say so much, some of it we don't even realize we're doing. It's just this communication that's happening between two people and they may not even realize it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Yeah. You brought up, you know, different cultures. You know, I know in Japan, it's a sign of respect. The lower you bow to somebody, how you offer your business card to somebody in Japan is a very like important structure to how you do it. Yeah. So, but here, like most of the time, people don't even give out business cards anymore, but over there, it's a very deep form of communication. And I think it goes with body language, because mm-hmm. they're they oftentimes will show deep respect. Even like if you're the lower subordinate of the person that's giving the business card, you put yours underneath and you bow further down because they are, you know, showing the, you know, yeah. So it's very cool. Like, and I think I kind of took with what my teacher had said with a grain of salt. Cause I've always, like you said, T, I've kind of always felt like that. Like if they're crossing their arms, they're thinking, or they're, you know, cold, or there's some other reason. I've never saw them as closed off, but you're right. Like when it's doing, when they're doing other things along with that, then yeah, you're right. It does show off something and like can be like a trigger to say, hey, there's something wrong.
Yeah. I cross my arms cause my back hurts.
Yeah.
And it's comfortable for me and it stretches those muscles out that are bothering me, or it helps me support myself when I feel like I'm just, you know, if I'm in an uncomfortable chair. I was doing that through the beginning, the intros, as I did, I had my arms crossed. So when you were, and while you were talking, even, and I was like, I'm not closed off. My back hurts. Miscommunication can happen.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That right. Just, yeah. Communication is always, there's always miscommunication too.
I don't often realize until someone brings it up how expressive I am with my body language, with my smile, with the way that I enter a room, with the way that I am with most people. I was recently at a theological conference and I was sitting in a classroom and I was kind of off to the side towards the front, but not like the very front. And
yeah, no, she doesn't like sitting in the front of anything.
Well, I don't mind sitting in the front. It just kind of always feels a little weird.
Yes, because for context, I often sit in the front row at church because I sing often. And when I do, it's easier to get to the stage. Yes. But Lori never wants to sit next to me when I do that. So I always give her a hard time about it.
So I'm sitting towards the front, just not in the front. And I am an encourager by nature. Like I want to encourage you. If I think that you're saying something, you know, that's good, you know. So at the end of this talk that I went to, and this lady was fantastic, this sister, and she was from Ireland, had a little bit of an accent, you know, she Irish just broke. Oh, it was fantastic. And she's, you know, but I don't know. I was encouraged throughout her entire conversation. I connected with it. And I think somewhere in me, I wanted to convey that, you know. Well, apparently I did. Because afterwards we came, you know, I was passing her by and I said, I just wanted to say that was fantastic. She goes, oh, she goes, you were so encouraging. You emboldened me in my speech. She goes, every time I looked at you, I felt like I could say more and do more. I was like, oh, good. It's working, you know. So I think without even knowing it, we can convey love. We can convey anger. We can convey disappointment. We can convey grace and forgiveness. We can convey a lack of confidence. There's so many things that we can communicate just with our body. And I think, I can't remember, T, at one point, I remember you did a class that I did, but I've been to a couple of others. And I'm sure there's some percentage, but our body language is actually much higher in what we're, the percentage of our level of communication than our words are. right? Is there some magic number
or something? I don't have that magic number. I don't know what it is, but I do teach. The presentations that I go and do, what I do teach is actually communicating in dysregulated situations. Yes. So that's why I love this topic. It's one of my favorites. I'm excited about it because you can de-escalate a situation with your body language. And it's a huge piece. You can control a room with your body language. You can, there's just so much that's part of it. One of the jobs that I used to do, the feedback I got from that is I build rapport really quickly. Huge portion of that is my body language that I come in with, into a situation with. And when we're dealing with kids with poor behavior, you can quickly turn their behavior around with your body language and how you respond to it. I'm sorry, I hate to compare kids to dogs, but it's the same thing with dogs. You know, if I don't want my dog to jump on me, you know, scolding it, no, really doesn't teach you anything, but man, you turn your body away from it, it's catching on. It's catching on.
Yeah. I was doing that recently with a dog I was dog sitting for. He was very excited and very happy, and he kept wanting to jump, and I just would cross my arms and turn around. And within doing that about 3 times, he finally got the hint that, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, that's, you know, that's a great top thing too, is that animals use body language to communicate.
Right.
And interspecies, they'll communicate. Mm-hmm. You know, a skunk will start stomping its feet before it ever sprays. If it's given an opportunity, it'll stomp its feet to warn off whatever's coming near. And if that doesn't work, well, then they get pretty, no denying that, what they're saying right there. But, and in our pets, you know, normally, this is interesting, I've noticed. Normally, if you see two dogs and they're baring their teeth, that's aggression. But we smile at our dogs, yet somehow they know it's not aggression.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, when I was a kid, I had a friend of mine. He was just playing with my dog. He was kneeling down and kind of lunging at her. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, my dog, who was the sweetest thing, like she wouldn't hurt a fly, she turned around and nipped at him and broke skin on his cheek. He had 3 holes because she had a crooked tooth. So it only got 3, you know, so we walked him up to his home and we talked to his parents and they're like, well, you shouldn't have been down on the floor charging at the dog. Like they were just kind of mad at him. And, you know, we felt bad and we're like, you know, if, you know, thankfully he was okay, but she felt he was down on her level lunging at her.
Yes.
She saw that as aggression.
Right.
And
often, frankly, I would too.
Yeah. Right. I was like, you know, we were kids, but I mean, dude, you kind of deserved it. She kind of like, because a dog, like, unfortunately, animals don't have the option of speaking to us, the way like humans can communicate with each other. And isn't it, this kind of going along with the same thing of like, when you're in the woods and like a bear comes at you, like you raise up your arms and you really get loud and try to make yourself as big as possible to kind of fend off.
Well, and they also say play dead with bears. With wild cats being big and loud, crashing things.
Well, maybe it's the cats that I'm thinking of.
They'll kind of. Yeah. And we've seen videos of where someone's done that and that works. I'd say follow your instincts. Yeah. Don't run with a cat. That's the only thing I have to say. Right. If it's a wild cat, don't run. Right. Don't run. But other than that, there's different things out there for different animals. And I would say we probably won't give too much advice on that on this because I would hate
right. No, I agree.
Your bear play dead, and then I get a call.
Right. What did you just say? yeah. But again, that's a good way of talking about the interspecies communication. That's how people, we always hear about dogs can sense our feelings. Dogs know when we're upset. Dogs know when we're being aggressive. And some people are empaths and can sense that too. Most people can, in some way, shape, or form, can pick up on feelings and emotions and stuff. So like if I see Lori sitting there and she's just kind of slumped down, I know something's wrong because she doesn't normally sit like that. Or she's staring off into space, which is not normal for her. You're right. I recognize a change in her. Yeah.
So there's universal communication. Like there's certain things that just as humans, we universally accept or understand with a person's body language. So like, you know, you make a frown and a frowny face and your lips are turned down. Universally, we know that that person's upset. Likely if their brows are furrowed and, you know, they're looking like this, then they're, if you're not watching, I furrowed my brows and yeah. Anyway, it could be anger, but if I'm just kind of sitting there and my mouth is down, but my brows aren't furrowed, well, then I might be sad. Unfortunately, there are some mental health disorders out there where affect, we call that affect, the emotion being presented, doesn't match the emotion that person's feeling. But typically, most people, it's pretty universal across cultures, across ages. You know, smiling is generally a form of happy, pleasing. Right. If we smile and we have a little bit of teeth showing and we're kind of stiff, then it's probably not a sincere smile. Mm-hmm. Right. We kind of know these things. And so, and then we also, how we perceive someone else's body language is filtered through our own experiences. So if someone doesn't, you know, if someone's got their brow furrowed and you grew up in an abusive situation, furrowed brow could mean danger. Whereas a furrowed brow could just simply mean thinking.
Yeah.
So yeah. It can be complicated, but somehow we manage it most of the time.
Yes. Well, I think how we manage it is, at least healthily, is if you're putting into context.
Yes.
So you're using it with multiple different pieces of body language. And the words and any actions, right? Any tone as well. You know, there's so many different ways that we can communicate. We're excited or that we're sad, you know, or we're angry. You know, there's all these different ways that we can do that with tone, with body language, and with our words. And when you put them all together, then you're communicating.
Yes, that's the richest communication, is when you have all of those. I mean, think about how many mistakes and how many misunderstandings happen through text.
Yeah.
Look at that reaction.
Yep.
You know,
all the time.
Yep. The simplest text message I receive, if I'm having a bad day, I could see it as this huge, just, I can't believe they'd say that to me. Right.
And they just said hi.
You talk to the person, they're like, yeah, they just said hi.
Well, why did they say hi? Why didn't they say hello? Why didn't they say, hey? Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. People can tell when I'm having an off day, right?
He doesn't use emoticons or emojis.
Yep. If there's no emojis in my text, something's off. Like, you know, because I want to convey as much emotion, whatever it is, one way or the other. So I.
But what's interesting is that there are people, if that's what you do is you give them an emoji, they're like, what's that even mean?
I know. Right.
Why is she sending me a poop emoji? Not that Lori would do that. I'm just kidding. But sometimes, like, if all you receive is an emoji, it's like, kind of need a little bit more feedback than more context, a flower.
Right. Yeah.
I just, and it's funny too, I just heard, so that the hands that look like they're praying, I just heard that that's actually supposed to be a high five, but they've now said, no, that'll be the, you know, and if they've put something else in that looks more like two hands are high fiving. I was like, how did this?
No, yeah. How did you know that?
Yeah.
Right. This is praying, people.
Yeah.
Just saying.
But yeah.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
Emojis well, and, yeah.
My mother-in-law for the longest time thought LOL meant lots of love.
So I began using a new acronym. I think it was last week. But I remember when I first read it, I'm like, what's that mean? If you know, you know, right?
IYKYK, yeah.
Yeah. First time I saw that, I'm like, okay, I'm missing it.
Oh, like, that's why you posted content. That out. I was like, why is she using IYKYK in this? Because, yeah, you know, I use it a lot, if you know, you know.
Right, but I never have, but I did the other day.
Oh gosh,
I felt kind of funny typing it out. I'm like, oh gosh, now I'm using one of those things I said I was confused about. Or I remember YOLO, you only live once, you know.
I don't have to look that one up.
Right.
Well, even our last episode, FOMO, fear of missing out. Like, I hadn't heard that one. I had to look that one up. And then there was, I think it was YOLO, FML. I do know what that one means now. It's F my life.
Yeah.
F being a bad word.
Okay.
But you have to know who you're talking to when you use that.
When you say YOLO, I think of
the candy.
No, but
no, that's Rulo.
We watch it all the time with the grandkids. It's a cartoon.
What are you thinking? Is some animated dog or something?
No, Mastermind or something like that. Anyway. The guy in there, instead of saying hello, he goes, "Olo."
Oh.
Sorry, sure someone knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, not me ever. So.
Yeah. But anyway, so communication is important. And you're right. We need to know who we're talking to and what generation they're from. And, you know, you got to take a look into consideration.
Yeah, and this is a good segue into kind of what we want to talk about in the second part about how do we use our own body language to respond to someone else.
Yeah.
I've had people come at me extremely upset. In fact, I was giving somebody a ride here a week or so ago, and they were just spewing a bunch of stuff out. They were upset about something. And then they're like, I'm sorry, you're the only person I can talk to about this right now, so I'm venting. I'm sorry. I was like, I figured that out after about the first 5 minutes. So I just kind of nodded my head. I was like, oh, that sucks. And, you know, so I was responding enough to let them know I was still hearing them, but I was driving. So I couldn't just like completely stop and listen to the conversation. And I think that's important to not, especially if somebody's doing that. She wasn't aggressive, but she definitely was upset. So I did my best not to make comments that could upset her more. Or I didn't want to feed into that, because I feel like oftentimes when we're in our moods, what's the meme I just saw the other day, which makes sense. No one in the history of saying calm down has ever calmed down, or being told to calm down has ever calmed down. Yep. And I'm like, that right there.
Yep.
Yeah. We don't calm down normally with that.
So I think Depending what you want out of the situation, what you need in the situation, who you're dealing with, of course. So for me, a lot of my experiences of using body language has been in situations in which people were either being very aggressive or they're so dysregulated they can't make sense of anything, but I need them to do something specifically. Yeah. Fill out paperwork, please. You know, or when I worked in a boys' home and I'd have to get boys to an appointment, you know, so I had to get them somewhere. And so I'm feeling anxious because I'm on a time schedule, have to be aware that I'm also pushing that out there that I'm anxious. Or if someone's being aggressive, that I'm either going to get, I have to be aware that I could either get aggressive back, I can be intimidated. Neither one of those things will work to calm that person down.
Right.
So it's finding what works in that situation with some basic tools, basic knowledge. So how I often start out with people when I'm teaching this in sessions, because it's usually with parents and they're dealing with kids who are naughty.
All their boundaries and buttons.
Yeah. It's like, well, what do you do when they throw themselves on the floor in the middle of the store saying, I want that piece of candy and I'm not going to get up and do what I'm supposed to until I get it? You know, that's a horrible spot for a parent to be in because they've got an audience, right? And they're feeling judged. They're feeling like a failure the moment the kid hits the floor with that temper tantrum. They're like, oh, here we go, right? So what do you do? I know what I want to do. There is a bathroom with there where the door locks. I'm just kidding. So typically we start begging them to get up off the floor. Please get up off the floor. Don't do this right now. Or we'll get up off the floor. You know, we do something that encourages them to continue that behavior because it's working.
Right.
But what if you don't say a word and you just stand there? What if you don't turn your backs on them because, you know, those kids are sneaky, but what if you turn partially away?
Yeah.
What is that? What signal is that sending them?
That's true.
You know, you're diffusing the situation. You're saying, I'm not engaging with you, because with children and anybody who's way up here dysregulated, that's, they're trying to get something, right? They're trying to meet some need regardless of what it is, but it can't be met in these conditions. So you disengage. Mm-hmm. You can say, you know, you can even give it a second and say, hey, when you're ready, you let me know. I'll be right here. But you disengage.
Yeah.
That works with grown adults. When I have and I've been in many situations where the grown adult, usually male, bigger than me, will get all puffed up and aggressive, and I realize they're posturing, mm-hmm. right? And if I feed into it, it can escalate. So, but I won't cower because that'll escalate it too. So I just stand still and I disengage just like I would with that 2-year-old. I don't turn away because that's not safe, but I disengage. And I'm, when you're ready, just let me know. And I disengage. You know who's really good at doing that? Teenagers. Have you ever tried to convince a teenager to do something they don't want to do? There goes the arms. And they stare at the wall. Like you're not even there. But they are hearing every word you're saying. But they don't want you to know that. It's infuriating. Okay. So it works. Disengaging works.
It does. It does. And I think, too, part of, I don't know, what I've always found hopeful is if I can remain calm, you know, even in the face of something wild or scary or.
So what does it look like when you're calm?
So you.
What do you do?
probably some form of disengagement, but I think not responding. It more than just not disengaging, because I don't always feel like I have the power or the strength to like disengage, but I can stop. I can be still. And I cannot respond back with my own emotions or feelings or, you know.
What's your voice like?
And usually lower.
Lower?
Lower.
Calm.
Yep.
Slow.
Slow. Definitely have to slow things down. Yes. Yes.
So, are you matching their breathing or are you breathing differently?
No, usually trying to take calming, centering breaths during that time is very good.
Mm-hmm. So there's this thing called mirror neurons.
Okay.
It's again, one of the first things we experience as, and we're just, there's a lot of research coming out about it. It's still being explored. But one of the first things we have in communicating is mirror neurons. So when our mom smiles at us, we learn to smile. Mm-hmm. So I call it the monkey see, monkey do neurons. So if I need someone to calm down, I have to be calm. So you're absolutely right. But I have to model it. And that's why it's important. So that's why, you know, kind of, and just taking some slow breaths, even if they're not yet, something in their brain is going to click on your slow breathing. When you don't rise to their level of speaking and there's rapid speech, but you're talking nice and slow, something in their brain is going to start kind of catching on to that. And they may just naturally kind of try to match your rhythm, which will send the messages to the part of their brain that's so dysregulated, that amygdala area. It'll send a message to it that everything is okay. They're safe. Yes. Most people, when they're operating up here, whether it's anger, whether it's sad, whether it's panic, whether it's any of that, it's because the amygdala has hijacked the brain and told them that there's danger and that they need to fight or flight. That's what aggression is. Their brain is saying, we're in danger. We need to get ready to fight. So panic is fear. It's getting ready to flee. And they start spinning like a top. That's why that, what you're talking about, that calm, that just easy. So you don't always have to disengage. The anger is the one that I typically will kind of do at least an initial disengage. First of all, for my sake, because I got a bit of a temper. And if I think someone's being aggressive with me and posturing, I want to posture right back. But that doesn't calm the situation. It might finish the situation, but it will not calm it.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah. I remember when I first started seeing my psychologist, I was very tense, very anxious, sitting on the side edge of the seat. And a few months later, after I'd worked with him for a few months, he made a comment to me that he's like, when I first met you, you looked literally like you were ready to jump up and run out of here. He's like, and you know, at that day, I happened to be kind of leaned back a little more in the chair and seemed more relaxed in talking to him than why I was very tense and like sitting on the edge of my seat. He's like, so I can tell whatever you're doing is working because you're not ready to fly out of here. That stuck with me.
So that's a really good point too. We can observe to others what we see them doing. So that's when we may not be just using our body language at that point, right? So the body language is super important, but so are our words. So when we have someone who's tense and seem like they're ready to escape, it is perfectly okay to observe that. It's okay to say, I notice that you look like you're about ready to run away. And some people are like, yeah, I need to get out of here. Okay. That's what you're feeling right now. You feel like you need to get out of here. Is there anything else we can do if they can't, you know, if they can't just leave? Is there anything else we can do to kind of help with that feeling that works for you? But providing the observation, I do that all the time. Like I noticed that, man, you know, when you first came in, you were way up here. Now you're kind of down here. What helped? What can we do again in the future? You know, but providing that observation, there's times I'm doing something I may not even be realizing I'm doing. And if someone says, man, you just look really upset. And I'm like, well, no, not really, but I wonder what is going on. And I can check in. Yeah. I think one of the funniest stories I ever experienced was I just started college and I was sitting outside between classes and I'd always go sit in the same spot. And I was sitting out there and you have to understand, I had serious social anxiety and I was learning to kind of get through it and was participating in class. But one of the things I do is I rehash things in my mind when I have downtime. And one day this girl walks by and she goes, you know, I see you every single day and I just have to ask you. And I'm like, oh, and I started panicking because, you know, that anxiety. She goes, do you have a party going on in your head? Because every time I see you, you're smiling. I'm like,
wow,
I'm going to go with that.
Got a party going on in my head. I love it. I love it. I think it's something important to me, and I've really been trying to do that, to model the behavior I wish to see reciprocated. So, you know, and I try to do it in my words and my actions, in my body language, you know, modeling. And I didn't think about it with those neurons. That really makes sense. It's how we can calm a child down. It's how we can calm ourselves down.
Mm-hmm.
To regulate that, to slow things down, to be calm in the face of, you know, all of the things. I like it.
Did you know that when you smile, even if you're sad, if you smile, it releases certain chemicals in your brain that can increase happiness? And that when you smile, at others, most people will reflexively smile back. It's that mirror neurons. So I would challenge anyone listening, do an experiment. Spend your day smiling at people, random people. Wave if you want to. I used to do that too. But, you know, going through the store and intentionally smiling, a genuine smile at people, you'll notice that your mood is lifted by the end of the day, if not before then. But guess what? You just lifted their mood because they smiled back. And even if they were having a bad day, that moment felt good for them.
And man, I think that's a good challenge.
Is this good?
We're good.
Okay. All right. Just a friendly reminder that anything discussed in this podcast is not to be used as a diagnosis or replacement for conversations with your own doctors, therapists, psychologists, medical professionals, or animal people. This episode is available on YouTube and most major podcast platforms. If you're not a subscriber, we'd love for you to be one. So hit the subscribe button to keep up with our upcoming episodes, and don't forget to like it so people know that it's a good episode. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads as Behind the Mask PC. You can also email feedback or future episode ideas to behindthemaskpc@gmail.com. To find us, EJ, Lori, and T online, links for us will be in the description of this podcast. And on behalf of the ladies and myself, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.